Welcome to the Mike and Doug Show. I'm Doug. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Doug. How are you?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. Old men always like to talk about their illnesses. I've had a cold, and so I apologize that I haven't been able to keep up with Mike and the Miners' research and the great staff writers there at Americans for Innovation. But today, we're going to take what we did last time in the last podcast and take it forward. And people, for some reason, they want to see our faces. Now, I don't know. I wouldn't do that to anybody unless, they were an enemy. But we're going to show them who we are today.
Douglas, you're a handsome dude.
Oh, well, maybe when I was younger. But now, I'm just a gray-haired old man. But last time, as you might remember, I got carried away spelling out the timeline that you and I had discussed before the podcast last time. And that timeline is so shocking because, being a historian, I always thought that I knew the stream of evil that has arisen to create what we know as the United Nations today, the very organization through the World Health Organization specifically that has created the pharmaceutical World War III. But what I did not know is the research that Mike and the Miners have pulled up. And that research highlighted a guy named Iverson and McCadman, but it highlighted the person that you've been talking about ad infinitum for quite some time, and now put together all the pieces to the puzzle to show the most amazing picture, which again is not just history. It comes right into our modern day, and it is, in fact, the symptomology of our historical demise. Matter of fact, the end of the Western civilization is based upon this research. And so we're going to talk today about a person I call Flip Wilson, but he's actually really named Philip Whitwell Wilson, and his specific intention to carry out what Cecil Rhodes Group, the Society of the Elect, had planned for basically taking over the world, what we now call the New World Order. And of course, it started with the League of Nations, which was a failure. But then you found out with your miners, who I know you never let out of the mines, because I never get to see them much. Hardly ever do I get to talk to them, but their research is so shocking that though I have a degree in British history, it completely blew me away to find out that the United Nations was created first by an organization called the Institute for Pacific Relations, and that that came out of Chatham House, and that the lead propagandist was Philip Whitwell Wilson. So tell us a little bit about his background, and then I'll get into, of course, calling names as I usually do.
Well, as you may recall, we first discovered his name when we saw some British research that proved that he was a host for Vladimir Lenin in one of his at least one of his trips to London with the some socialist conference. I think it was the third Social Workers' Party conference or something like that, and Lenin stayed with him. And so we knew Whitwell Wilson was associated with the Pilgrim Society deeply because his name appears on the 1909 First Imperial Press Conference. So we knew about this guy, and we saw enough of his involvement to realize that he was a player. But no one had, we hadn't, we didn't do any more digging after that. And then some research, and I can't remember, it was a University of Minnesota library. And what I need to do here is give a shout out to all the librarians and archivists who are helping with this research. We thank them deeply. We're just coming up with some new stuff, even yesterday, Douglas, proving that quote by Stalin. Remember that quote by Stalin that everybody uses? That I don't care who votes, I care who counts the votes, or something. That's a paraphrase. But all of the quote fact checkers started saying that that was incorrect and that he didn't say that. Well, we have the chapter and verse. He did say that, and it's actually in Russian. So anyway, I digress. So Philip Whitwell Wilson, as you and I were talking yesterday, you could almost describe him as the Pope for the New World Order, because what he did is he helped develop the concept of Christian socialism. And we've always seen this sort of loose tie between socialism and communism and fascism and Marxism and Leninism and Engelism and every ism you can think of. But what we have proven now is that all of those isms emerged out of the social gospel concept that was developed by W.T. Stead in the Cecil Rhodes' biographer, and also a journalist and the father of tabloid journalism. And let's see, there's Stead, there's Whitwell Wilson, and then there's Bishop Henry Cotterman Potter. And I'm sure nobody's heard of him, but he was a longtime trustee of the Pilgrim Society and also a trustee of Columbia University. And he specifically was a prolific writer on this side of the water in developing the concepts of the social gospel. And, you know, whenever you hear social and gospel, it's hard to know what they actually mean, because Christians are supposed to be social, right? And they're supposed to be forgiving and loving and all those good things. What these guys did is they very cleverly co-opted concepts of community and love and forgiveness out of Christianity and completely transformed those ideas into what is called the social gospel, or you might as well call it fascism, communism, Leninism, Stalinism. They essentially hijacked the Christian church, or they tried to. What we can see now, because all of us are the products of a whole century, the 19th century, the 20th century, was the century of the God is dead movement, if you'll remember that. Remember that Time magazine article, Is God Dead? We just looked it up, April 23rd, 1966. Was one that was produced, and it was produced by Henry Luce, the Time magazine. He was vice president. He was head of the London Bureau at the time. He became the president of Time magazine the next year in 1967. And he then in 1997 became the president of the Pilgrim Society in the United States. So I wanted to give you that one set of facts to show how there was a well-funded, concerted effort to completely eviscerate Christianity by these robber barons from London, from the British Pilgrim Society, and they have been at it like Chinese water torture, drip, 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 since the late 1800s. And Philip Whitwell Wilson entered the scene in 1900 as a Cambridge University graduate who got enamored by the settlement movement, which was essentially, can you hold just a second? Somebody's talking. Philip Whitwell Wilson was a Cambridge student who got enamored by the settlement movement and actually moved into Toynbee Hall, which was the first location for the settlement idea. And the settlement idea, put simply, is this. Every community has got shared property, and they're run by this virtuous leader who tells everybody what to do. Essentially, that's what the settlement movement was. And so it was co-opted by the Pilgrim Society first in South Africa. They recruited Salvation Army people to move to South Africa to be colonists for the British in their new experiment with corporatism in the British South Africa Company. So Philip Whitwell Wilson was a godsend to them because he was a good writer. And he had a very useful background in his mother was part of a very well-known publisher of Bibles and the Book of Common Prayer in England. And so in Whitwell Wilson's family, he was raised around biblical scholars, theologians, academics, you name the profession required to actually publish a Bible. And you're talking about some of the most intense scholarship you can possibly imagine in even working on the development of a Bible. And they developed what they called polyglot Bibles, where they would do 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different languages together in the same Bible. I think they even got up to an octaglot Bible, and more. So Philip Whitwell Wilson grew up knowing Christian theology. And what we see in his later writings after he was basically became a socialist, is an extremely well-developed capability to take Christian metaphors and twist them and turn them and make sure that the conclusion the reader would draw from his very well-written works is that socialism is to replace any previous conception of the church or the Christian church, and would be replaced by these proposals that they were making to the world for socialism. And this really was the emergence of the modern social democrat, was out of these writings all over the world, not only in England, but in Germany and all over Europe, that the power brokers of the world were smitten by this idea of the social gospel. And the other thing about this that has been so devious is the way these people were able to co-opt many Christian leaders of the time and even today in embracing these ideas and making the church basically a secular home for feeding the poor, taking care of people, that kind of thing, and making it a social institution rather than its ultimate calling of calling people to belief in Jesus Christ. I'm going to stop there for a minute.
Well, you know, the conclave, when they came across this new information that has been revealed by Mike and the Miners, the staff writers over there at Americans for Innovation, they were jumping up and down because basically it seems as if the following is what happened. When a corporatist like Cecil Rhodes becomes so filthy rich that they decide to take over the world, they enlist the help of British lords, Lord Rothschild, Lord Pirbright, Lord Lothian, Lord
Rosebery,
and then they always have a propagandist, a newspaper man, as it were, W.T. Stead, as you pointed out, basically the person who one could say created yellow journalism. And then after Rhodes died, it was Alfred Milner and his kindergarten, they called it, but later called the Round Table, Milner's Round Table, which then also became Chatham House and the Royal Institute for International Affairs. They had the Boer Wars, both of them, and he was basically called the butcher of the Transvaal, Alfred Milner was. And he basically took over the Rhodes Scholarship as well as the Rhodes, all of his money, basically.
The trust.
The trust fund, yes, which was for a long time one of the largest that there was. And of course, he had the richest men. Three of those lords were Rothschilds by marriage or otherwise. And then in the Transvaal, they basically butchered them. They experimented on them. They found out how far newspaper men, journalists could go. For instance, Winston Churchill was the war correspondent who basically told the big fat lies about what was going on in the Transvaal, which was also, through Burroughs' welcome, experimentation of pharmaceutical companies to try to create viruses and illnesses that could be spread to kill people even more efficiently than bullets and bombs.
That's correct.
We are still in that today. So what happened was Philip Whitwell Wilson followed John Ruskin into the belief of Jeremy Bentham, which was welfarism or the social gospel, which was also pushed by the Fabians, the Webbs, and many others. And that then became the Labour Party in Britain. It became a variety of names, but now it's one of the many versions of the parties in the Parliament of Britain, which to this very day calls itself the representative of labor. No, no, no. This was a bifurcation of the corporatists, elitists, imperialists, who were in almost all cases eugenicists and depopulationists, who created wars. These are the people who manufactured World War I, and then afterwards, at the Treaty of Versailles, tried to create the League of Nations, which was what? That was a group for complete hegemony, in other words, world control. And it failed because America would not join the League of Nations. But after World War II, instead of W.T. Stead, they chose Philip Whitwell Wilson, who had been with the London Daily News and then later with the Times, and then became literally
the New York Times, not the London Times.
Right. And he came to America, and he was such a great propagandist and flying under the false flag of Christianity, a Christianity that is completely denuded of Christ. There is in the works that I've read, and he has many, many, many books. Oh, my gosh, you can't read all the books and pamphlets that.
Well, by the way, in this write-up that is being done right now, we link to maybe 30 or 40 of his works. So people can read for themselves how good this guy is. He's a master at what he wrote.
He makes Pulitzer and Hertz look like kindergartners. And what he did was, when he came to America, we must remember that your ingenious research on the Imperial Press Conference, and later it became the Empire Press Union, is basically the foundation of what we would call today Reuters-Thompson and the Associated Press, which is nothing more than a conglomerate of mainstream media propagandists who support these corporate elitists and their pharmaceutical war on the world, their economic war on the world, their war of materialism, pointing out that science and anything science does is good. Matter of fact, it comes straight from the divine. And yet, it was Philip Whitwell Wilson who was able to literally write the books that were then being used by Protestants and by supposed Christians to preach from the pulpit the social gospel, which is nothing more than the path of perdition straight to communism, fascism, and dictatorial Bolshevism, which was spread from Stalin into China. And what are we fighting today? Philip Whitwell Wilson, through the Institute for Pacific Relations, was one of the founders, along with those other people I mentioned earlier, to create the United Nations. So after World War II, which was again a false flag, British-created war, they then created, instead of the League of Nations, which was a failure, the United Nations, which today rules America. The pandemic is ruled by the World Health Organization, period, period. The CDC and NIH have no choice but to follow the recommendations of the most idiotic group that has helped anyone with their health concerns through an organization that is British founded to do what? To support Russian Bolshevik communism, Chinese communism, and the British continuing imperialism of the world. And that was the shock of shocks to me as a historian to find out that the IPR, the Institute for Pacific Relations, was in fact a Chatham House created piece of British imperialism. And we are still living underneath their shadow at this moment. And until, when Trump became president, we made a list of 12 things he needed to do. The first thing on the list was get rid of all organizations connected to the United Nations. He defunded them by 50%. But had he done what we said and simply pulled us out of the United Nations, we would not be in this fake pandemic, which has been the same exact thing that has been going on since Cecil Rhodes and Alfred Milner, the butcher of the Transvaal, have been experimenting on humankind through war, propaganda, pharmaceuticals, and the preaching of the gospel of materialism through what I call the science or superstition science. Because science, there's no theory that lasts more than 100 years in science. It's all superstition. It's no more true than mythology. And what we're fighting
Douglas,
here,
I drive by a bunch of houses every day that say science is real. Come on.
Science is real control.
Science
by
is
eugenicists,
real, whatever that means.
And depopulationists. Yes, it is quite real. But here's the deal that I want to make is my point today. And that is that we aren't fighting against flesh and blood. We're fighting against spiritual powers.
Correct.
And these spiritual powers have basically done what we have pointed out so many times before. Once you have platitudes take over for truth and superstition science take over for reality, then you create what are called specters, phantoms, and demons. Specters are lies, phantoms are big lies, and demons are lies that have been made into laws. And so the pandemic laws control the whole earth right now. And it is unbelievable that through the same kind of fear-mongering and false flag nonsense of creating supposed enemies, now we have the invisible enemy of a virus which doesn't really exist in the form they say. There are synthetic viruses created. It wasn't the Chinese who released it. It was the British through the Muriel Animal Health Institute and through Perbright. We've demonstrated that again and again. We've even demonstrated that the new intelligence group out of Britain called Kinetic has used China as their petri dish for the Asian flu, the swine flu, the bird flu, and now the, of course, the coronavirus, which is nothing more, as people should know, than a mix of cold and flu put together, which there will never, ever be a cure for, because every single person who gets the flu or a cold or a COVID-19, supposedly, each individual has a different version of it. So when you hear there's 17 versions of it, yes, there are. No, there's actually millions of versions of it. And we will never, ever have a vaccine that works on the on that, especially when you put the garbage and the poisons that they put in it. This is nothing new.
Can we go back to Philip Whitwell Wilson? I know this, they're connected. Everything's connected to these people. But I think that the thing that we've learned about reading his work is how cleverly he wove his history as growing up in Bible publishing. He had a very confident knowledge of Christianity. And having myself organized gospel music groups that traveled all over Europe, including all over the UK, this research is hitting very close to home, because I encountered many of the socialist churches that were smitten by the work of Whitwell Wilson, and yet I also met just as many fine Christian churches all over the UK. But what I saw then and continues to this day is the people that were striving to actually live real Christian lives were generally marginalized by the culture, even in the 70s and 80s. And what we did see is that there was absolutely no interest among the established socialist churches to have a group like us or hear discussions of salvation in Jesus Christ. This is not what they were about. They were about something else. And what always fascinated me is how do these people fund themselves? Because they have these huge, expensive old churches that take huge amounts of money to keep up. There weren't many people going to these churches, and yet they just seemed to carry on. And where'd they get the cash? And now we know where the cash came from. The cash came from the British slave bankers, specifically Rothschild, and then his minions that he developed, including Barclays, HSBC, and J.P. Morgan, Vanderbilt, I'm missing somebody, and Andrew Carnegie, and Rockefeller. All this money was pushed into any group calling itself Christian that would push their social gospel. And what I'm sure also happened is, and because we know that they were forming the YMCA and all the swimming pools and the sleeping rooms. And by the way, we've also discovered there was an enormous pornography problem within the YMCA going all the way back to the mid 1800s. So much so that one of the longtime trustees of the YMCA in New York was a genitourologist. I wonder what their problem was. And he published many books on the subject. So what we see here is that there was an enormous amount of money fed to any Christian church or any Christian organization that was willing to be bent, willing to be compromised by this social gospel idea. And so they developed very clever, very sophisticated words to talk about this, quote, theology. It wasn't a theology. It wasn't words about God. This was a words about humanity's descent into a kind of an animalistic environment with a Christian veneer. And Whitwell Wilson was, I haven't read anybody that was better at that than him. And so what I think happened is he grew up around this environment. He used his skills as a writer to very cleverly present Christianity in such a way that he damned it with faint praise. And he got very good at it. And the better he got at it, the more copy space he was given in newspapers, in publications, in books. And so you mentioned about journalism and W.T. Stead. What we're seeing in, and it's hard to believe for most people because they don't read the newspapers that much anymore, is that these people saw journalism as a very powerful tool for them to push their globalist world control agenda. In fact, to them, everything centered around journalism. Because journal, and they even talk about, Stead wrote a book, a paper that we've published many times, called Government by Journalism. They saw journalists, the global journalist community, as a better organizer of the thoughts of society and communities than governments. And so what they said was, well, since our mechanism is really more in touch with the people, why don't we just govern? Let's just govern ourselves. Let's just take up the mantle. And Cecil Rhodes really liked that idea. So he let W.T. Stead run with that in the Society of the Elect. And they have not stopped running with it. Randolph Hearst was coached by W.T. Stead, as was Larry Ellison's baby daddy, who worked for Stead. So we are talking about people who have been the major guides of the publishing and educational and theological worlds, who have been so well funded that they could just keep pushing out these lies for over 100 years. And so what I experienced in working with the Christian churches all over Europe and Asia is that there was a dividing point, and you started seeing independent churches develop because there were people that were saying, nah, this isn't right. And so there wasn't any institution for them to go to, so they started forming their own churches and alternative denominations. And so consequently, I was fairly critical of the thousands that developed because I said, well, where's the unity in Christ in this? And what I did not realize, and I'm only coming to that realization now, is those were safety valves in the churches, in the church itself, moved by the Holy Spirit to get out of those poisonous environments so that they could start looking at Christianity the way it needed to be looked at. And so I'm changing my view about the explosion of denominations in America, because some of those were to preserve a true Christian message.
This is kind of in our wheelhouse for many years now, and it's no surprise that you have the co-opting of these beneficial institutions by people that have an agenda. And I mean, all you got to do is look at the logo of your socialists in England. What is their logo? You know, the Fabian Society. It's a wolf in sheep's clothing. And so that's their modus operandi. That's the way they roll. It's all about the name game. You can always just rename something and say, well, it wasn't me. It was that guy over there. And so it's a shell game they play with us continually. Offshore corporations, foundations, the whole NGO stratosphere that most people are just blatantly unaware of. I mean, it's...
Well, one of the things that I was getting to about that, John, when you came in, is that here's the issue. I think one of the big picture issues for a Christian in looking at this social gospel, who was pushing it and what's the fruit? I mean, Jesus talked about, you'll know the, what did he say? You'll know these wolves by looking at the fruit that they've created. Well, we know for a fact that for hundreds of years, maybe many hundreds of years, the British founded their economy on slavery. And it's institutionalized in every aspect of British culture. Now, ask yourself, is that Christian? Is slavery Christian? And of course, the answer is no. And so what we have in the British Empire is an empire that was founded on sin of the worst kind, the exploitation of our fellow human beings. And then ask yourself, that being the case, can anything good come out of the activities of these people? And so what we are suffering, now I'm going to come to today, what we are suffering from in our culture today is the exact fruit of the efforts of these people for over 100 years to not only take down America, but also to take down Christianity. They were doing this simultaneously.
Beyond a shadow of a doubt. It's social Darwinism that has taken science too far and then added the false flag of Christianity. So it's Christian social Darwinism, in other words, the survival of the fittest, the bifurcation of society into the elite and the welfare state. And so in all cases, these lords who worked with Cecil Rhodes, who worked with Alfred Milner, who worked with Philip Well Wilson, these lords believed, but they wouldn't tell the truth, that they were going to give the social gospel, a Christian social gospel, to the poor masses, the proletariat. Well, they had no intention of, because they invented Leninism, they invented Marx and Engels, they invented Marxism, they invented all of these isms, socialism, fascism, communism. And what was that for? That was to placate, to give a panacea to the common people, to make them think that they were going to be included in a welfare state where the very filthy rich were going to give them what they needed to live. That never happens. It turns into wars. These are class wars, economic wars, World War I, World War II. Every war you can name has had British behind it. Now, let's go back to ancient times. This all started in Babylon. It started when Hammurabi started inscribing his laws on votive stones. And if you ever went to that votive stone and read it silently, you were put to death. You could only read it if you could understand it to begin with, just like Egyptian hieroglyphs. But if you could read it, it had to be read aloud because the stone would speak. And whatever the stone said, that is law. That rules you. And then what happened after that? They started creating interest, usury, and they created an economic society based upon these laws, which they considered to be divine. And if you couldn't pay your bills, you were locked up in a prison and you were put to hard labor until you paid your bills. That's exactly what this is, that later then became in all, they wouldn't even call it religions. Let's just look at the Greeks. The first coins were temple coins, and they were used to pay the male priests who had taken over the divine revelation of the feminine priests, the priestesses, and they used those coins for their own male machinations. And so I'm not just saying this is misogyny outright, but the patriarchal society has been infused into all religions since basically 2000 BC. I know I have a degree in comparative religions, and when you follow this, even with the Tibetans, the holy Tibetans, they wiped out the Bonpo people, which was a feminine origin religion. Well, when the men come to power, whether it's the Catholic Vatican and a pope who supposedly has the divine connection to God, and anything he says it can be made into an encyclical, the words of God manifest through a man. This is Roman worship of the human being becoming divine. Just like the Greeks believed that Hercules was made divine and moved into the stars, and so were many other heroes. This is complete nonsense. And so what we have is the same thing. Look at the Anglican Episcopal Church. Look at the British Church. King Henry VIII wanted to have multiple wives, so he created his own popedom. He created his own religion. And then later, Philip Whitwell Wilson, as you pointed out, is basically the pope of a new social gospel. And from the pulpit was preached the nonsense, denuded Christianity that took Christ completely out of the picture and made a literal interpretation of the gospels, so that they then said Jesus was a communist. And therefore, they just like
said that.
Klaus Schwab says, you will own nothing and you will be happy. Incorrect. You will own nothing because we, the elite, the 2,000 people who are members of the World Economic Forum, will own everything. You will own nothing and you'll be happy, or we will kill you pharmaceutically or through wars, economic slavery. It's the same old story. It's been going on since Hammurabi. It's nothing new. And who are the best at it? Well, the Vatican Church. The Vatican, not the Catholic Church, not the church based upon Christ or St. Peter. No, the Vatican is now ran by a Jesuit. And the Jesuits took the evil, I'm sorry to have to say this, of the patriarchal cultures of both Judaism and Islam, which is basically Old Testament, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, be afraid, fear of God is the first stage of wisdom. All this nonsense of a vile, wrathful God, that is not Christianity. So to fly like Philip Whitwell Wilson did, the false flag of Christianity, to preach that the poor people are going to be given money and given a good life by the rich people. How did they get rich? They got rich through wars. They got rich through theft. They got rich through fleecing and slavery and the most horrible things in human history. And now it's a pharmaceutical war. And what do? We believe that what the mainstream media tell us, because this is what the way we were raised, because we were so amazed by science. When the wireless and radio and television came out and newspapers, whatever they said, humans believed to be the word of the divine. It was absolute truth. It settled science. It is reality. And anyone who says anything else simply will be put to death by an injection, by being sent to war, by an economic war, by economic slavery. It is the same old story. But Philip Whitwell Wilson, through the United Nations and through what I did not know, the Institute for Pacific Relations, used the Salvation Army, used the YMCA, used the social gospel of Jeremy Bentham, used Fabianism, used, as John pointed out, all these NGOs, Soros NGOs controlled American politics. How did he get the money? By not paying any taxes on betting on the stock market under the auspices of an economic system that is supposed to be Christian-based, which it is not, and a free market-based capitalism, which it is not. We have yet to see capitalism in its true form in America. And the only place I have seen true communism based upon the early Christians is in the Camp Hill communities. And they are very few. There's a few in America. And what do? They're complete service-oriented communities that take people who should receive government funding. They refuse to take the government funding, and they help these people become valued members of the community. That is the nature of true Christianity. So I want to read something. Because my hope here, because oftentimes as I'm calling names, I don't point out that really, in reality, there is a true Christianity. It just, as Gandhi said, I believe in Christianity. I've just never met a Christian. So there are Christians and yourself and your group that traveled through the world without any money, just barely being able to survive, basically spreading the good news. You were being supported by higher hierarchical beings. And so in Ephesians, I want to read this quote because this is my solace, and it can be the solace of anyone who wants to listen to these words. In the Bible, in Ephesians 6:11-12, it says, "Put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." In other words, the people we're speaking about were inspired by demons, by right. devils, and by fallen angels. And then later it says in Ephesians 1:21-22, it says that Christ is far above principality and power and might and dominion and every name that is named, not only in this world, but also in that which is to come. And God hath put all things under his feet and gave him to be the head over all things. If you understand that, then what we're telling you in our research and in what it is that we brought forth as truth news, what we bring forth from the Conclave and from the Americans for Innovation, is the hope and the salvation to see evil for what it is and confront it directly. Because at this point, the mainstream media propaganda is so profound that people still believe that it's true. But not so much anymore. Falsehood politics in the post-truth age have come, and people are beginning to realize. And so we have to thank you guys over there, gals, for the research that you do, because this research is not something historical that should be put into a book that was approved by the British Toynbee Society. No, these are truths that can aid us today in the fight against not blood, not flesh, but against literally principalities, powers, and dominions, which, as we know, have the name Elohim, Dunamis, Exousiai, the thrones, angels, archangels, archai. All of these beings have fallen elements to them, fallen beings, but there are the ones who are not fallen, and they are here to help us and work for us and give us the power that we need to get through these incredibly dark times, which have been a 200-year plan laid out by the very people that our research has pointed to.
Yeah, I think that I didn't know you were going to read that scripture in Ephesians, but I think, in my humble opinion, the current attack on humanity and the attack on the United States is an attack by those principalities and powers. And in all of my experience, what I think we are seeing is it's a watershed moment. And I think that what needs to happen is that the Christian church needs to step up. And I understand why we haven't. That Johnson Amendment that was passed in the 70s that only gave tax exempt status to churches if the politics was not dealt with from the pulpit essentially silenced the moral dialogue, the civil discourse, and Christians' engagement in it. And that has been deadly. I mean, look how our culture has just become so secularized and now demonic. I mean, you can't turn on the TV anymore without being reminded of that. And then I think that we see in these people and the countenance of these people that are attempting to shove things down our throats, a level of demonism where their countenance itself shows us who they are. But I go back to, you'll know them by their fruits. And if the fruit isn't good, Jesus continued, you need to cut the tree down. And I think it's time for Christians to enter the fray and cut the trees down. These are evil trees bearing evil fruit, and we cannot allow them to continue.
And as you have now pointed out, the United Nations is 100% communist. They do not support America. They are
now,
truly
evil. You say that, and we have proven in those 1950 to 52 congressional hearings that the Institute of Pacific Relations formed the United Nations, and they were specifically called out for their communist infiltration. Now, this was before McCarthy, so we're not talking about McCarthyism. So I know that all the trolls are going to get out there and say, well, they're just, you know, Mark McCarthy was discredited. No, he was vilified. He wasn't discredited. And these hearings before that proved with chapter and verse, and we've linked to those, that the United Nations was a wholly developed communist entity where the British Chatham House had infiltrated the U.S. State Department, the Department of Navy, and various other institutions in Washington, and were pushing this communist agenda and were pushing the United Nations into being. And who was running it? British Chatham House. We've got to wake up. We can't keep letting them show us, talk about, oh, the CIA over here, or the Illuminati over there, or the Freemasons over there, or you name it. Those are all distractions. We've got to get down to who has done it. And we now know who has done it. We have their names. And this Philip Whitwell Wilson individual died in 1955. He had taken their agenda through World War II, had been a part of the development of the Marshall Plan, which fed cash to all of these evil specters that were running our world and were attempting to consolidate their power further into this one world government. And now I believe that only the righteous in Congress stopped them, and the righteous in our society stopped them. But even they have been compromised to the point where it's an open question whether we're going to succeed at this at one level.
I'd like to point out that, of course, the world, the Bretton Woods Agreement, Bretton Woods Conference, was the basis for the economic foundation of the World Bank, the World Trade Organization, and all of the economic aspects of the United Nations. And who
and
was
the IMF.
And the IMF. And who was it that ran that? Harry Dexter White, later proven to be a complete communist.
Right.
And who was the British representative? John Maynard Keynes, who was part of the London School of Economics, which was a completely socialist / communist organization.
Well
and
known.
What, very well known. And so what did they want? What did Keynes want? He wanted a one world currency called the Bancor, named after the Jewish Venetian bankers, called the Bancor family, the Banco family, which was the basis of modern banking. So the banksters are literally these elitists that I've been speaking about, and they work in the following way. C.S. Lewis, who was of course, he was British, and he wrote about religious topics. He wrote a book called Screwtape Letters.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, Screwtape is an arch devil, and he's speaking to his nephew, who's a devil, and this is what he says. This is a conversation where his nephew is saying, how can I help you, Screwtape, help Satan get the soul and the spirit of all human beings? And this is what Screwtape says to him. To us, a human is primarily food. Our aim is the absorption of its will into ours, the increase of our own area of selfhood at its expense. We want cattle who can finally become food. We want to suck in. We are empty and would be filled. Our war aim is a world in which our father, Satan, below, has drawn all other beings into himself. Those words might as well have come from Cecil Rhodes, from Alfred Milner, from Philip Whitwell Wilson, if he was telling the truth, and the people who've created the United Nations and the people who have created the pharmaceutical war against humanity, turning us into cattle that make us simply food for these fallen beings who wish to consume us.
Right.
Yeah, and all we need to do to update this whole policy stance is look at current events, because what you have going on right now is all the activity going into Afghanistan. You could see that that was the safe haven for all of the, whatever you want to call the group that has overrun Afghanistan. The key is the whole, don't look over here, there's nothing to see over here, of the Pakistan Institute of International Affairs, right? That was
right. That was one of the groups, by the way, in the IPR.
One of the groups in the IPR, exactly. And so you have that, and you have all the massive funding that's been going into Pakistan all this time, and supporting harboring of these criminals, serving whatever agenda they're serving. They have their own reasons for doing it, but they could become useful pawns in somebody else's strategies regarding what the British call the great game. And that's get two people that you don't like fighting each other, and it saves you the trouble of having to fight them yourself. So it's this whole idea of proxy asymmetrical warfare is what we could call it. And this is what's going on. It's going on right now. And right now there's literally thousands of refugees of suspected dubious agendas coming into the United States at military bases. They're being held in sections, and the military are told, well, you can't go in there. But yet the refugees can leave whenever they want. They can go around and take pictures of things. But the military are told, well, no, you can't take pictures of these people. I mean, we're totally being overrun by international affairs organizations.
Well, we just discovered, John, that Whitwell Wilson's brother-in-law was a manager of Liverpool Bank that was sold to Barclays. And his background from the early days was refugees. He ran refugees for the League of Nations. And then he was a consultant, even to the United Nations, on refugee efforts. Gosh, I'm going to say even in Pakistan, if I recall. And so here we see Whitwell Wilson's hand, his guiding hand, this Pope of the social gospel, guiding the United Nations into the current environment we have. And probably we're going to find he was associated with George Soros somehow. We haven't seen that yet.
Well, John's hat tells it all. The CIA was created by the British as the OSS, and you've pointed that out. And Five Eyes is nothing more than the British control of American intelligence.
And secret intelligence we didn't know until 2010, by the way. So it was a parallel private agency for the Pilgrim Society.
And Afghanistan is the new opium creator, whereas Thailand was before, China was before, and it was always the British controlling the opium. And so the CIA controlling the opium was nothing more than this normal historical social Darwinism of survival of the fittest, which are the banksters who make money off of turning people into opium slaves. And where they run their money out of? Shanghai, Hong Kong. And it's the British attempt to control these things all through the auspices of groups like the CIA. So when people say, oh, the CIA runs opium into America, people will laugh at that. It is absolutely true. But here's the reality. We spent trillions of dollars there to try to protect one thing. $3 trillion worth of rare earth minerals, which have yet to even be mined at all. What did we do in North Korea? That was all about the untold trillions of rare earth minerals being fought over by the Chinese, the Russians, and the Americans, which again have yet to even be tapped. When it comes down to it, it's the same economic fleecing of all resources at the cost of the people who do not make it in the social Darwinist, socialist gospel theory of the Brits. And now we don't just mean the British people, certainly not. And
we don't mean the British people.
Exactly, because they are an elite, being,
the self-anointed elitists
and the banksters who are in control of it all. So when Cecil Rhodes gathered three Rothschilds together with himself, considered to be the richest person in the world at that time, those were four of the richest people in the world, and their program still goes forward to this very day.
Correct.
And Wellcome Trust is considered one of the largest trust in the world, one of the largest also.
It is the largest.
And they give more money to pharmaceutical companies than anybody else. Of course, along with the Gates, along with Rockefellers, along with
Gates is number two.
So what we have is the same old story. And unfortunately, we, the plebeians, the proletariat, we were told the false social doctrine that we're going to rise up and take over what the corporatists own. That hasn't happened. It's never happened, except in China, where Mao Zedong did destroy the ownership of most of the landowners and gave it to the peasants. And then later, he made sure that 52 million peasants were killed. Stalin killed 20 million people in one pogrom. These are the results of the fake social gospel that's being preached and handed out to the people who are being manipulated by the mainstream media, by science, by pharmaceutical companies. It's the same old story.
I need to remind you that in 1925, when the Institute of Pacific Relations was formed, Mao Zedong was a participant in a literacy movement within the YMCA in China. And what we see there is when he came to power, he was being coached by Stalin. And in the end, when you track back these rat trails, it all goes back to London. So out of London Chatham House, Stalin was being coached, Mao was being coached, and every element of the Leninism of the earlier times was being coached out of London. And so Mao was not ever his own man. He was always coached and run by Chatham House and the Pilgrim Society out of London. That's what we've got to realize. There is a unifying thread here. It just didn't happen randomly. These guys were consistently trying in every country to consolidate the New World Order control of banking and resources under the British Empire, the new reformed British Empire that would be run by corporations. That's what we're seeing. So when we say, and there's an article coming out, that basically the British have been at war with Christianity for centuries, and yet pretending they were Christian. It's an amazing effort that they've put on to fool the world that they have any iota of notion of what Christ talked about. They do not.
We have been hoodwinked, and thank heavens to Mike and the Miners and the Conclave and Betsy and her team and John Barnwell and his group and all the others who are lifting these blinders so that we can actually see who it is that we're fighting. Because until we can see who we're fighting and who it is that is in a direct war with us, we have no hope of winning. But I'm going to reiterate my own solace, which is that the spiritual world and that the beings above us stand ready to help and serve us at all times. There are great disasters that happen, world wars that are created out of total false flags. There is economic slavery. There is slavery. There is horrible things going on. But as we bring them to light, they get disinfected and they, in fact, die. And that is what we are intending to do, is let truth rule the day, call on the forces that are even higher than flesh and blood, and bring them down into our modern world so that consciousness, the most powerful thing on the earth, can then win the battle against these evil forces.
Amen.